Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, the podcast.
You said it. Whether you're Pats, Geno's, Tony Luke's, you name it, he is not a big cheesesteak fan. But if you're an Eagle fan, this is a great Friday morning for you. You've been waiting all season long for Carson Wentz, the million-dollar question in Philly. When would the $128 million man look like the guy we were used to seeing? We got it last night, though as many people would say, sometimes when it's the New York Giants, anybody can look good back there. Keyshawn, J. Will, Zubin, presented by Progressive Insurance. All of our guests will join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. That includes the legendary Archie Manning, the father of Eli and Peyton, and the grandfather of one of the best young high school quarterbacks, the next Manning to come. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. We'll talk about Arch with Archie on the way. But first, I am sure the lion's share of our viewers and listeners watched Eli and Peyton out there for decades. And it's good morning, Archie. Great to have you with us. First things first, I mean, what is it like for you as fans? We have some withdrawal, but what's it like for you for the first time in more than 20 years? There is no Manning for a game to travel to or watch with your wife with Olivia on Sunday?
Well, Zubin, it is a little, it's a little transition, a little different, but we're enjoying it. Not quite as, I would still get nervous. You know, if we went to a game, I'd have to get up and pace sometimes, or when we stay home, watch on TV, you know, I try to find a lucky chair. I make Olivia get up, move around. I go in another room, watch, try to get some first downs. So we're not having that on Sunday. We're not glued to the TV like we were when we didn't attend games, but we still watch. We still keep up. We've got certainly players and teams and coaches and friends, and but we're dealing with it just fine. All is good considering all the circumstances.
Archie, I heard that you communicate each week with this year's top NFL pick and Joe Burrow. When did that relationship start, and how did it start?
Of course, when Joe transferred from Ohio State to LSU, and LSU is just 60 miles up the road. Now, you know, I'm an Ole Miss man, which is kind of one of LSU's rivals, but still, you can't live in New Orleans without following LSU. And kept up with Joe, especially when he got ready to start his senior year. And at our passing academy, Manning Passing Academy, we usually have in about 40 college quarterbacks that are counselors for those 4 days during our camp. And not all of them from the big schools. We got them from small schools and throughout the country. But obviously we had Joe in that summer. And I invited his dad to come. You know, his dad's a longtime coach. And he's originally from Mississippi, from a small town in Mississippi. And I knew that, but I'd never met him. I'm older than he is, but we had mutual friends. So I invited Jimmy, his dad, to come to the camp also and kind of see what we do. So we got to know Joe there. Obviously followed him very close his senior year at LSU and that great season they had. I mean, national championship, my gosh, Heisman Trophy. I don't know, Keyshawn, I don't know about you. I don't know if I've ever seen a quarterback play any better for a season, game in and game out. I mean, every single week and through the championship, the playoffs, championship game. So just got to know Joe, like the way he kind of takes care of his business. And then, of course, the number one pick in the draft. So he had gotten to know Peyton at camp. He leaned on Peyton a little bit, kind of – you know, just things going in when you're the number one pick in the draft and at the quarterback position and maybe how to approach a few things. So just keep up with his dad. And, you know, it's not easy. Peyton always says there's a reason that team had the number one draft pick. So, you know, it's going to be a struggle. And Joe's handling it very well, but I'm sure he'd like to have more wins right now. He's not used to losing.
That is correct. None of your family members, friends, and anybody that played that position like to lose at the quarterback spot. We're hearing a lot about your grandson who could potentially be the next Manning at the next level, and I'm talking about big-time quarterback, and I hate to put the type of pressure on that young man in Arch Manning, but he played on national TV for the first time a week ago. How would you describe the difference in the other two, in Peyton and Eli, compared to Arch at this age?
Well, first of all, I'll tell you a couple of similarities, Keyshawn. It's the same school, and it's kind of the same program. You know, football's changed a lot over the years in high school ball, but people are throwing it more. Now, Peyton and Eli, when they played, they threw it a decent amount compared maybe to the other schools. But now, you know, everyone, just about everyone's in spread offense. Everyone's in shotgun, and they're throwing the ball more. So that's one advantage I would say Arch has over Peyton and Eli, that their offense is a little more pass-oriented. And the other thing, he got to play as a freshman. That was a huge thing for him. They had an incumbent quarterback, but Arch was able to beat him out in the 7-on-7 drills in the summer. And then fortunately, they moved this young man to receiver. So he was a senior, and he got to play, and he contributed. But so much experience that year, just playing as a freshman. So now, as a sophomore, you know, I think he's a little more confident. He grew some over the summer, put on some weight, and just getting to play. His dad and the coach, I think, are doing a good job of not building this thing up too much. I know they were on ESPN last week, which was a big deal for the school, big deal for the team that they played, but just trying to keep things in perspective. And, you know, the main thing last year, the theme was kind of, let's let Arch be a freshman. I think it's really kind of carrying over, let him be a sophomore. And let's just high school football is a great institution in our country. And the one thing, Keyshawn, you know this, it should be fun. It should be fun. So let's don't wrap this up with a bunch of pressure. Go out on Friday nights with your teammates and play hard, play smart, try to get better and try to win some games.
You know, the crazy thing about it, when I watched him, Archie, and I saw obviously Peyton and Eli both in high school and in college, it's like somebody from the Manning family certainly spit him out because of the mechanics. When I watch his drops, delivery of the ball, I'm sitting there and I'm saying to myself, is that one of those two kids that just went back in time and played the position? Because, no, he does. He certainly looks like one of them at the quarterback spot with the mechanics.
He's got a good motion. I think a lot of that was natural, Keyshawn. He didn't play any kind of tackle football in the early days. He played flag. He played flag until he got in the seventh grade, and at their school they start what they call middle school football. But in flag ball, he was always a quarterback, and he threw it well. He just had a good motion, and he moved around good, threw on the run good. And of course, then he got into the middle school, which usually is a real run, you know, kind of under center, get a big running back and pitch it to him most of the time. But they actually, even in the seventh grade, kind of got in the gun and got somebody that could snap it there. And he had primarily a big old tight end he could throw to, and they threw a lot. And so that's good experience at a young age. But his motion was always pretty natural and pretty good.
Archie Manning, two-time Pro Bowl quarterback, father of Eli, or better yet, Peyton Manning, and then Eli Manning.
And Cooper. Who is Arch's father.
Who is Arch's father, joining us on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin this morning. Archie, let me ask you this. Many people have suggested that Trevor Lawrence, the quarterback at Clemson, who could potentially be the number one overall pick, much like Eli Manning and Peyton was in their days coming into the NFL, Eli Manning obviously decided that he did not want to go to the San Diego Chargers for obvious reasons and elected to bypass the New York Giants, traded for him. What advice would you give Trevor Lawrence if he decided that he didn't want to join the likes of the New York Jets?
Well, it's a tough deal. It's hard. I know when it kind of came up between Eli and Tom Condon and his agent, you know, and they kind of, Eli threw it at me. I said, boy, this is bold. It's bold to do that. And, but the more he looked into it and studied it and talked to people, Eli decided, and it was his decision, that's what he was wanting to do. And it was a bold thing. It worked out. I mean, San Diego got their quarterback, and he was a great one for years and years, and it worked out well for Eli. So this is Trevor Lawrence. We had him in camp too as a counselor. Watched him so many times on TV, even in person here in New Orleans in a playoff bowl game. Tremendous player, great looking prospect, big good looking kid. Throws ball, moves well, does everything well. I don't know what to tell them. I really feel for teams when they're struggling, because I played on a bunch of struggling teams, and it's hard to stop the bleeding. You know, it's one thing after the other. Injuries always play a big part, and you can get in a rut, and people turn on you. I think it's extra hard. Keyshawn, you know this. It's extra hard in New York with the media situation there. I think the Jets have a good quarterback. I think he's a very good young quarterback. I know he's hurt right now and coming back. Now, usually if a quarterback is not playing real well, it's because he's not getting a lot of support. And so that's kind of what's going on in New York right now. Their team's not very good and they're not winning. I don't think as they try to build that thing back, my personal opinion, they've got the quarterback that they need that they can win with. And it'll work out where Trevor can go somewhere else in a team that needs him more than the Jets do.
You and I both feel the same way, Archie. Thanks for joining us this morning, Zubin.
Indeed. The pride of Drew, Mississippi. And we'll wait to see with those Ole Miss fans and those Vols fans with Peyton and Eli. Maybe Arch is next or maybe somewhere else. The way Key's talking about him, he's going to have plenty of options. Always great to catch up with you, Archie. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks
have
a lot,
great
Archie.
Day.
Uh-huh.
Same to you. That's Archie Manning. Again, his other son, Cooper, his football career was derailed by an injury, and many people thought he could be a very good player along the lines of Peyton and Eli. That's a very high standard to set, but obviously now he's enjoying his boy. Watch him play Friday Night Lights, and he'll be the next great Manning.
You think Archie Manning knows something about playing quarterback?
Just a little bit. And for people,
I'm just asking, that's all.
And the reason Key's bringing that up is Key's kind of been the lone wolf as we've been talking about the winless Jets, essentially saying that Sam Darnold is the right guy.
Just
he was
saying.
A legendary quarterback at Ole Miss, and Archie did mention, for those of you that are too young, that he struggled a lot with the New Orleans Saints. He was a Saints quarterback for a long time, but the franchise struggled, so he knows what it takes. It takes a special dude, as he mentioned, to walk into a situation.
Just saying, man. All I'm saying is Archie Manning, Peyton Manning, Eli Manning, Arch Manning. That seems like a handful of quarterbacks in that family. I think he knows something about quarterbacks. And the fact that he's just said, I think they got their franchise quarterback, tells me something.
Right.
So people need to start listening, I would think.
Archie, connecting with our wide receiver, Keyshawn, they are in lockstep about Sam Darnold. They seem to be in the minority in that particular situation. But, hey, that guy has some serious credentials and bona fides for sure. Keyshawn, J. Will Zubin, presented by Progressive Insurance. Our lone guest this morning remaining, Diana Russini, will join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. She'll be with us in 17 minutes, and she will have some late-breaking news this morning on what's going on with the Las Vegas Raiders. Their game has been moved. You may have heard of that. You may have heard about that, moving from Sunday night to Sunday afternoon, but she's got some details on the way. We will go from A to Z. From A to Z with a few other letters in there. UFC 254 set for Saturday night, or I guess it's Saturday afternoon if you're in the United States. It'll start at 2 Eastern. The main event, Khabib Nurmagomedov, best known for defeating Conor McGregor, takes on the very talented Justin Gaethje. Again, tomorrow, 2 Eastern ESPN Plus pay-per-view, exclusively available to ESPN Plus subscribers for $64.99 if you want to catch up. ESPNplus.com/PPV. It's just a click here, a click there. Super easy to do. Dana White, UFC president, was with the show yesterday, and he told us why this thing isn't quote-unquote in prime time, but instead mid-afternoon.
So what happens is every time we put it up, first of all, this is a global sport now. We're in every country all over the world on some form of television. And these poor people, listen, I've been living it. I've been living it over here on Fight Island for 5 weeks. You know, have to get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to start watching these events. So for this event over here in Abu Dhabi and for the rest of Europe and the rest of the world, we're doing it prime time here for them.
That's a great point. Oftentimes, it's all about when something starts Eastern time, when you watch television, hear all the announcers say it. But for sure, it's a global sport. Let's make sure everybody can watch. Again, champion versus champion, UFC 254, Khabib and Gaethje, Saturday, 2 Eastern, ESPN Plus pay-per-view. You just heard the reasoning. UFC 254, exclusively available, ESPN Plus, $64.99. Again, ESPNplus.com/PPV. For more details, and Dana did tell us, expect to see Connor against Poirier in January. One other thing, the Raiders' offensive line essentially is now in quarantine. They are all questionable for Sunday afternoon's game with the Tampa Bay Bucks. Our Diana Russini, who I mentioned, will join us in about 14 minutes from now, saying that one of their offensive line members, Trent Brown, wasn't wearing a tracing device at all times in the facility, and there were instances of the linemen as a group unmasked together on the sidelines during practice when they were in quote-unquote intensive protocols, which means masks are on, Zoom meetings, point-of-care testing, so that rule was broken. Damian Woody spent his entire career playing offensive line in the NFL, told SportsCenter Scott Van Pelt last night just what it would mean if the Raiders' O-line is not able to go Sunday.
How do you get five guys ready to go when you're not on the practice field? I mean, it's the most critical unit on the team.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, they're going to be doing Zoom and getting ready for a Todd Bowles defense that ate Aaron Rodgers' lunch last week?
Uh-huh.
This is not like two teams playing on Thursday where you basically do a walkthrough. This is not the same situation here.
Mm-hmm.
And I would be terrified if I'm Derek Carr if my starting guys aren't out there.
Yeah, that's your protection. We just want to mention, for those that aren't aware, yesterday the NFL moved this game from Sunday night to Sunday afternoon, so it'll be Arizona and Seattle playing Sunday night. If this game goes off and if the Raiders can get their interior front set, it would be a 4:05 kickoff against Tom Brady. So what can you tell me about this? Practice time, O-line, togetherness, all the stuff that Woody was talking about.
Woody's correct about that. You got to have your offensive line in sync. Why would you try and play a game with five new bodies across the board with Derek Carr underneath the center? Is it David or no, Derek?
Derek.
I always mess that up.
David just got sacked again.
Stop.
Come on.
So when you think about it, you want your left tackle or your right tackle to be in sync with the tight end, the back chipping or the guard pulling, stumbles over the center, backing up. I mean, all of those sort of things you got to think about. You know, you got to think about the center. Who's the center? Who's making the line calls? You got to think about the protections. You got to think about in the run game. Is the tackle able to understand that the tight end next to him is going to help him on a double team? Can he feel him on his hip? To go from the defensive end to sliding up to the linebacker, scraping when he's going to leave him and go up to the next level to get his block. All of those little things is the part that the offensive line has to get together. And if they don't have that together, you're going to get somebody hurt or killed, K-I-L-T, either one.
Mm.
Whichever one you think is worse, right? I mean, that's kind of how important the offensive line is to anything.
Now, let me just bring up something you did earlier, which really started to make my mind race, just from the perspective of the league before the season started, knowing there were going to be some coronavirus considerations. They did set up what they called, quote unquote, competitive considerations. If an entire position group were
yes.
to be out, I mean, how can you play that game? Especially in this case, if the position group is protecting the most important player on the field, leading to your earlier point. Imagine this outbreak happened in the QB room.
Yeah.
Then what do you do?
Yeah, what if it happened to, I don't know, a room with the New Orleans Saints, for instance.
Right.
And it's Drew Brees, Jameis Winston, and Taysom Hill.
Right.
Now what you going to do?
Right.
What are you going to do?
With a handful of days to prepare.
Who's the fourth quarterback? Who's the emergency quarterback? Oh, I don't know. You couldn't play the game. You couldn't play the game.
Now, this is a situation we should mention that if everything goes well with the testing, with the guys being in quarantine, they could be back, because this is really more of a earlier in the week situation. The NFL has put into place a new mandate that essentially you've got to be in isolation for 5 days. So if you go back to when everything happened and you put 5 days on it, they would be clear to go Sunday afternoon. So that is there. If everybody can stay clean at this point, the game can be played with those guys up front protecting Derek Carr.
You could always sign Blake Bortles, though, huh?
He's available.
The NFL is doing the right thing by moving the game. And then if they want to get the fans at 20 million people that may be viewing or whatever the number is,
right,
an opportunity to see a really good football game in Seattle, in Arizona. You know, you take the primetime game away from the Raiders and you put them in the 4 o'clock slot. I mean, yeah, well, they get a chance to still play.
No doubt.
Just won't be prime time with everybody in the country watching the only game.
Small price to pay considering the circumstances. And the league did say they just wanted to make sure the fans that watch each and every week and the fans that can't go to the stadiums this year that are still thirsting for football, that they would have something on a Sunday night. So I thought it was a pretty good gesture.
And it allows them to move the game if they need to move it permanently somewhere else as well.
Correct. That's a great point. And right now Arizona and Seattle have no testing, so it's not that big of a deal at all. By the way, I should just quickly mention this is the first time John Gruden is taking on the Bucks, whom he won the Super Bowl with
me.
You. Keyshawn,
oh,
right?
God.
Me. Well, you said me.
You're going to get it.
But this is the first matchup he's had with them since returning. So that is very, very interesting. It's a juicy subplot. And Key, a little bit later in the program, is going to talk about that's not the only reunion this week in the NFL. There's a couple more. You may not be thinking about them, but we'll get to them in just a bit. So much more on the developing situation coming up with the Raiders and what's going on with their offensive line with Diana Russini, plus the game of the week, which involves two undefeateds, all of that and more.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Those are the words of Adam Schefter. Now the words of ESPN NFL reporter Diana Russini, who joins us this morning. A little straight talk brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Diana, let's get straight to it. I think most fans may be aware that the Raiders game with the Bucks has been moved from Sunday night to Sunday afternoon because of what Adam Schefter just referenced. But you've got some other details this morning.
Yeah, so the offensive line is quarantining at this point right now, as Schefter talked about, and we're following closely the results of their COVID-19 test. Because they're on the West Coast, we don't have any of those answers just yet. But basically what's going to happen is Sunday morning, they're going to take those POC, those rapid tests, and if they're clean, they'll be able to play. So right now it's really up in the air whether or not those offensive linemen will be able to go, because right now they are quarantining. Now the NFL and the NFLPA reviewed, they took a look at Vegas, at their facility, their surveillance cameras, to see if maybe there were some mistakes made by the Vegas players. And Trent Brown had been discovered not wearing his tracing device, which is so important right now during these investigations, because this is basically going to tell you who he's come in contact with. This is how you can control whether or not it spreads through your team. So the fact that he was discovered not wearing that is a really big issue, on top of the fact that other offensive linemen were not wearing their masks during practice. So there is a bit of an issue. In terms of the game, though, I spoke with sources with the league and with the Raiders. Game on for right now. Now, Sunday morning, let's say those POC tests come back positive. Let's say the entire offensive line all have COVID. There is an advisory board that the NFL came up with that basically will have a conversation. It's made up of former players, some former coaches, and they'll have a conversation about competitive advantage and disadvantage. But I can tell you this, I just spoke with a source right before I came onto the show, guys, about that advisory board, because I was looking at it as, you know, the Patriots, the Titans, they had to deal with a lot of disadvantages. You know, what's different here? Yes, it's a completely it would be an entire unit wiped out. And it was communicated to me that the advisory board would most likely not look at this as a disadvantage, even though we know it is. But this would fall onto the laps of the organization. This is their problem, their responsibility. They've been supplied all the things that they need to prevent it. And this is more their fault, if that makes any sense. So, you know, Sunday morning is going to be a really busy news morning as we find out whether or not they test positive or negative for COVID.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. You're going to cover the Titans-Pittsburgh game this weekend, and you've talked to both teams. What are they saying? What are they up to?
Well, Key, you know this better than anybody. I love talking to teams that are winning, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone is loose. They're having fun. They love each other. Every Zoom meeting I'm doing, they're hopping in on each other's calls. So we'll just start with the positive stuff from each team. But let's talk real the issue here that the Steelers have. We know that they have the best, or at least the second best, run defense. You take a look at some of the running backs they've stopped this year. Kareem Hunt, Saquon Barkley. Philip Lindsay, even Melvin Gordon, guys that we respect, but guys, none of these running backs are Derrick Henry. So, you know, just talking to some of the defensive players in Pittsburgh about how they plan to stop him. I think it's really interesting. I had one player say to me, you know, you watch the tape and you see a lot of the issues with the DBs is they're going for his legs. They're going low, right? Because that's what they're taught. But with Derrick Henry, he's just too big. You can't go for the legs. And the key is they know he's going to get the ball. The problem, or not the problem, but the goal is to prevent him from getting to that second level of speed, because that's where Derrick Henry gets you. If you actually look at his first few steps, he's not that quick. It's that the second, third, fourth. So that's what they're really focusing on, trying to slow him down in that regard.
In terms of Tennessee, there's plenty of doubters, including myself, about their record and who they are.
Yeah.
How are they reacting to that sort of, you know, stuff that's out there?
So they don't really care. I mean, you know Mike Vrabel's personality. They act like they're 0-6 when you talk to them. They almost are a little angry at times, which I think it's a result of really what they've been through, right? We know that they dealt with all those COVID issues. A lot of people looking down on them. I had one player say, I feel like we're getting virus shamed. You know, obviously that was out of their control after the league reviewed it and found that nothing went wrong. But, you know, the confidence that they have in Ryan Tannehill and what he's been able to do, and we see this relationship with his offensive coordinator, Arthur Smith. They have figured this out. Ryan's so decisive, especially under pressure. And that's the difference that I've seen in him this year compared to last year. But, you know, anytime you talk to these guys, they definitely act like, and this is their words, street rats, like where no one respects them. Nobody thinks they're that good, that they're the fakest undefeated team in the league. And I kind of get that, right? Because I even like, are they good? I don't even know. Are they
right?
Good?
I
do the same thing. I cover them all the time and I still don't know if they're good. But they are. And their game management, and you know, Pittsburgh pointed this out to me yesterday. They said they're so good at situational football and game management at the end of the half and at the end of games. And obviously that's led by Mike Vrabel, who we all saw him take that penalty with 12 men on the field on purpose to gain the time, or at least, excuse me, to kill the time. To gain the time. So it's coming together. And I think while we all want to doubt the Titans, I think that's where we're in the wrong.
We know that Bill Belichick obviously is a great coach and probably the best coach we've ever seen with our eyes. But then he has a tree. And within that tree, there's a lot of little leaves that have fell off, whether it's Charlie Weiss, whether it's Romeo Crennel. There was Josh McDaniels who went to Denver.
Eric Mangini.
Eric Mangini. I mean, there's just a whole bunch of them. And then there's like a Vrabel.
Yeah.
What makes Vrabel different than those guys? And why is he such a good, better coach than them?
So technically, Mike Vrabel's not a coaching tree member. He's just a former player, right? He never coached with Belichick.
Yeah, never coached with him. But
as you know, you're right. You learn a lot.
He learned a lot from them, though.
So the times I've been around Mike, I never get the feeling that his identity is a three-time Super Bowl champion of the New England Patriots. In fact, I feel that Mike has always sort of set himself apart from that, as he wants to be his own person and identify with the way he does it. Because, you know, you don't see him run that team the way Belichick has. It's not an uptight, strict discipline team. They're loose. They're fun. They actually have a lot of personality. In fact, I would say that the Tennessee Titans have taken on the personality of Mike Vrabel, which is why it's worked. And, you know, you talk about a player coach. He's the ultimate player coach, but in a way that he is demanding of them, that it works. He doesn't just let them do what they want to do. He can speak to them with, look, I know what you're going through. I know what's going through your mind because I've been there. And oh yeah, I've done it three times as a champion. And I think that's what really, really works. I very rarely talk to players that share with me frustrations with Vrabel. It's that's never their issue because he's done a really good job of getting the most out of them.
And it's no small thing that on their way to the AFC Championship game last year, they went to New England and knocked off Bill Belichick and the Pats. And that's not that he was talking about too much because they were on the march to try to get there. But that is something that really, I think, opened a lot of eyes that they may not have been familiar with Mike Vrabel before. You go in and beat your old mentor in his old place, in Tom Brady's last game, what it turned out to be with the Pats, it says something. The Ravens are on a bye week this week. We're speaking to Diana Rossini, ESPN NFL reporter. So they got the bye this week. They've been very busy. They picked up Ngakoue, and they are kicking the tires on Dez Bryant, Dye, who hasn't played in the league since 2017. What are you hearing about this?
So Dez worked out for the Ravens back in August, and I remember thinking, where did this come from? Like, how did Dez get a workout with the Ravens? But, you know, GM Eric DaCosta is always trying to build, always trying to give Lamar more weapons. So, okay, maybe he's got a little bit more gas in the tank. He's only 31 years old. And I had heard that the workout didn't go well, that he didn't look fit as much as they expected him to look. Remember when Dez worked out for, at least he played with the Saints two years prior to that before he tore his Achilles. And I remember talking to the Saints about him. And they felt that he still needed more work, but they were willing to take that risk. The Ravens were not, though. They moved on from him. They told him, you know, go back, work out, get better, come back fit. And now apparently Dez is ready, and it looks like this is going to happen. So he'll be probably the biggest star on a practice squad. If you think about all the practice squads around the league, right? I can't name another. I don't think I can name a player on a practice squad right now off the top of my head that has had as much experience as Dez Bryant has. So this is them just. I think there's no risk for the Ravens. What if Dez is able to come out here and become a great weapon and go back to playing the way we've seen Dez play? There's no loss for the Ravens to do this.
And we should quickly mention this year, there's a little bit of a different situation with the practice squad. Normally a guy like Dez with that much accrued time in the league would not be eligible for the practice squad. But this year, Dye, practice squads are way different. I think almost anybody with any level of experience, a ton or a little, could join a practice squad.
You ready?
You're on the other side of the major experience. I made my first appearance on the practice squad. So, Dye, that is something interesting to keep in mind as well.
Oh, for sure. And I am interested to see if this will work out because I do think that any time they can add a player of his caliber, I've spoken to people that are close to Dez and, you know, they're always going to tell you, oh, he's the hardest worker. He's doing everything he can. And I want to believe that, right? We're seeing with Antonio Brown too, right? He's working out twice a day. They're doing everything they possibly can. But whether or not this works out, you know, remains to be seen.
Yeah, indeed. The Ravens certainly need some upgrade. Hollywood Brown is great, but they need a big.
We'll wait to see if Dez is that big addition. I know you're going to be covering the Titans and the Steelers. We spent much of our time talking about this morning. So safe travels out there. This is the game that was initially postponed and moved back to Week 7. And believe it or not, Week 7 is here. Thank you, Dye.
Yes, thanks, guys. And I love the digs, by the way. I feel bad because in my Italian culture, whenever you go to someone's new home, you're supposed to bring like cannolis or some dessert. I didn't bring anything except my love for both of you.
All right, we'll wait for the wine.
You want wine?
Yeah.
We went from cannolis to wine?
Red wine.
Fine, it's next time.
The day drinking. It's a little early. Still to come, our smart picks in sports and movies. And this week, it's the best baseball movies of all time with the World Series on deck just hours away. That's after Key has this word from our friends at Sport Clips.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus. Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com. Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team.
Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
And before we let you go, it's our normal Friday staple at this time with our great friends at Redbox. The Smart Picks brought to you by Redbox. We'll have the Smart Picks in sports and then get our Smart Picks for the best baseball movies. Seems apropos with the World Series resuming tonight. All right, Key, your Smart Pick in sports this weekend is?
Raiders over the Bucks. I know we're waiting to hear what's going to happen with the offensive line situation, but let's assume the offensive line is good to go.
Sure.
I got the Raiders over the Bucks. I think John Gruden going back into Tampa, excited, fired up as John could be, knowing that he's the only coach to deliver a Super Bowl championship team to the Buccaneers. That is what's going
to
happen.
You're one of the handful of wide receivers that's delivered a championship to the Bucs. You guys did it together down there in Tampa. Any great memories from that as Gruden gets set to face the Bucs for the first time since returning to the NFL?
Well, we've had our ups and downs, and we certainly have great memories together. We won a championship together. We played in playoff games together. It's just, you know, one of the things for us, him and I, is, you know, this famous clip that it's Monday Night Football when I played at Tampa. Him and I on a back-to-back, you know, kind of, I was doing the screaming and the hollering and the shouting. One-way conversation where he was listening. And it was just one of those deals where, you know, Gruden has this big play call sheet menu, and he called a play and thought he called another play. And when I went to the sideline, he changed the personnel grouping. So I basically gave him a tongue lashing, so to speak, about taking me out of the game at that time. Most people think it was because he didn't give me the football, which is totally false. That's just been a narrative that's been floating out there from SportsCenter guys like you for years.
Yes, guilty as charged.
It was about, you know, just trying to get the formation together and burning a timeout. And so him and I got into a little tussle match of the tongue, you know, and hey, man, that was then. We cool now, no? In fact, we had prior to him taking a job with the Raiders, we had probably a 45-minute conversation prior to him taking a job, like 2 weeks before he was taking a job. Even though he knew he was taking a job, he goes, Key, you think I should do it? What do you think about their secondary? What do you think? And we're talking, and I'm sitting there going, man, you already took the job. Who do you think you're talking to?
Should I take this $100 million from Mark
Davis? Right. We're having a conversation. He's like, do you think I should take the job? I'm like, dude, it's been out there. You're taking the job. What are you talking about?
He was great for us, for sure, for years on Monday Night Football, and maybe he'll be great for the Raiders. It certainly seems like they are a different team than his first 2 years. Now, obviously, in their new locale of Las Vegas. I'll go with Jimmy G returning to Foxborough. I just think it's a great, juicy story. We should also mention that Teddy Bridgewater with the Carolina Panthers is going to see the New Orleans Saints again.
Yes.
So that'll be a little interesting reunion as well. All right, so from the Smart Picks in sports, we both got our eyes on the NFL, the Smart Picks on Redbox, baseball movies. I'm going to run through some movies here. These are iconic baseball movies, again, tied into the World Series resuming tonight. We got a World Series off day coming in a couple days, so just go to Redbox. And if you got a baseball withdrawal, just hang out with one of these. We'll start with 42.
Yeah, that's mine. 42
right off
is.
The bat.
Yeah, because
the leadoff spot.
The leadoff spot. Jackie Robinson, you learned a lot about him, at least I did, through the eyes of the movie. Chadwick Boseman, obviously, the late Chadwick Boseman. Mm-hmm. Great performance, you know, and so when you look at that, he played the part to a T. And just learning from a black man mm-hmm. having to go through what he went through in that time period in sports, just dealing with those sort of issues, and even today we still deal with those issues. It amazed me how Jackie Robinson was able to do it. Now, obviously, growing up and going through school, you read books, you see all those sort of things. And there's several other movies that's out there, but mm-hmm. this one, to me, just felt like it was the right one.
Yeah, and I think a lot of actors say when you're playing somebody that is just a legendary figure in society, much like, you know, when he played Thurgood Marshall, one of the great members of the Supreme Court, it weighs heavily on you. Broke the color barrier in 1947, and as Key said, in some ways, we're still fighting it. The Sandlot, which is a great comedic movie that a lot of people love if you're of the right generation. Moneyball, Oakland A's, Billy Bean, winning more with less. Essentially, it permeated all throughout baseball. I believe Brad Pitt and Jonah Hill were in that. Normally, you don't see those two guys together.
Analytics.
In a movie, analytics, numbers. Here's my choice. Field of Dreams. And I'm going to mention this because I worked in Iowa for a long time. The Field of Dreams is out in Dyersville, Iowa. And it's really too bad what happened with the 2020 season. This year, the Chicago White Sox and the St. Louis Cardinals were going to play a game, Key, at the Field of Dreams out there in Iowa in the cornfield. Major League Baseball had constructed an 8,000-seat stadium right there in the corn in the great state of Iowa to have an all-time game. But obviously, COVID-19 washed it out. Next year, they're hoping to have the White Sox back. They're close proximity to the Illinois-Iowa border, and we'll see what kind of opposition they can get for the White Sox. So in 2021, the Field of Dreams will come to life again in Major League Baseball. I'll choose Field of Dreams. A League of Their Own was great in 1992. Rookie of the Year, Fever Pitch, and of course, Charlie Sheen and company with Major League.
Yeah, 42.
Smart Picks is brought to you by Redbox. Watch new movies and top entertainment, plus try free live TV on Redbox with over 70 channels of news, TV shows, viral videos, and more. Just a quick reminder, we're also brought to you by Shell. Get more time to listen to our show by going to Shell and getting three things done at once. First, fill up with Shell V-Power Nitro Plus. Then save up with the Fuel Rewards program. Finally, snack up to save even more at the pump. Make the most of the stop you need to make with Shell.
Grill corn?
Grill corner?
Do you like grill corn?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Versus steam, boiled.
Grilled.
Okay. Just want to make
a little
sure.
Char on the corn is never a bad thing. Right. Really want to mention, we're always on top of breaking news. We're following everything for you on this Football Friday. Great piece of news here, Key. Adam Schefter reported no more positive tests for the Raiders, so that game, hopefully, just a couple days away, is on track to be going. And also, no more positive tests for the Denver Broncos. This went under the radar. Their running backs, Coach Curtis Motkins, had contracted COVID-19. They are actually getting set to welcome Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs to town on Sunday. And by the way, they're expecting snow in Denver on Sunday. Enjoy your football week.
Thanks for listening to Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 6 Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, or wherever you stream your audio.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's LECTRIC ebikes.com.